Let's go to Britain, where there are calls growing for Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn to step down immediately after the party's worst election loss since 1935. Labour lost dozens of seats in last week's general election after Britain swung behind Prime Minister Boris Johnson and the Conservatives. Senior Labour figures have blamed Jeremy Corbyn for the party's massive electoral loss.
Corbyn was a disaster. Everyone knew that he couldn't lead the working class out of a paper bag. The most disastrous result for the Labour Party. The worst result since 1935. People like John and his pals will never admit this, but they have messed up completely. I feel really angry about this, that we persevered with Corbyn.
That's Labour's former Home Secretary, Alan Johnson. Well, John McTernan was a political advisor to former Labour Prime Minister Tony Blair and a former media advisor for Julia Gillard here in Australia. He joins me now from London. Welcome back to RN Breakfast.
Oh, it's great to be back.
Now, Jeremy Corbyn has agreed to step down as Labour Party leader, but he's refusing to say when. Should he resign immediately?
Yes, he should. This election defeat was the worst Labour Party election result since 1935. It's a massive step backwards for Labour. And we lost massively in heartland seats that had never had a Conservative MP in their history. I've now got Conservatives sitting for them. Jeremy Corbyn was the uncontested leader of the Labour Party. The manifesto was his policies, and it was his messaging, it was his campaign. There were all his appointments in the party headquarters. It's time for him to go, and go very quickly.
How much pressure is there now for him to go quickly, or is he going to dig in?
Oh, he will dig in. He's a very determined man, some might say stubborn. He didn't resign as leader when his shadow cabinet resigned. He didn't resign as leader when more than three quarters of the parliamentary caucus voted no confidence in him. He is absolutely, in a sense, he's shameless. And there's no way he'll be shamed out of the post or shamed into taking an early date for his retirement. The only thing that could move this now is the unions. If the big unions switch against him, then he might. But I think he tries to do his best to make sure he can determine if he can.
And how likely is it, though, the unions will turn?
I don't think they will turn. It's the big union, Unite, which is it's a big engineering and transport union. Their leader has been a strong supporter of Jeremy Corbyn's, and it's very unlikely he'll move now. I think he'll wish to make sure that the succession is secured for a Corbynite successor. And that's what the battle's really about. Does Labour want to have another leader who moves the party to the left and loses the next election, or go for a leader who actually will be popular with the public at large and try to turn back one of the biggest defeats Labour's ever had?
Well, I'll go to the issue of successes in a minute. Just picking up on those comments there by Alan Johnson, and he's not alone in making those comments, but is Jeremy Corbyn entirely to blame?
Yes.
In a word?
Absolutely to blame. Yeah, he is the leader. He had his manifesto, exactly the manifesto he wanted. In 2017, he had to do a manifesto quickly, so it was a lot like Ed Miliband, his predecessor's manifesto. This was the work of Jeremy Corbyn and his team. All his people were in place, not just in the leader's office, but all the way through the regional and national structures of the Labour Party. He controlled the messaging, he controlled the candidates when he could drop in the parachute in the people he wanted. And this was on the doorstep across the, particularly in the constituencies where people voted to replace Labour MPs with Tories. He was raised as an issue. His character, his judgment, his patriotism, his tax and spend policies. It's all about Jeremy. And I tell you, if it was a Corbyn supporter on here and Corbyn was just forming a government over the weekend, they'd be saying it was all Jeremy Corbyn's victory. Mm. If it would have been Jeremy Corbyn's victory, it sure has to be Jeremy Corbyn's defeat.
How much, though, does Labour have to accept responsibility in terms of keeping Jeremy Corbyn as leader, despite all of those polls showing that how deeply unpopular he was?
Oh, look, he wouldn't have lasted very long in Australian politics.
Nobody seems to in Australian politics, of course.
Well, let's see how Bill Shorten lasted for a long time, but then fell at the last hurdle. I think Scott Morrison's got a lot of running in him at the moment. But the thing is, we don't have the ability to quickly switch leaders. And if you're backed in by the big unions, it's very hard to dislodge you. And having won two elections in quick succession amongst the membership, the judgment was made by people, the senior people in the Labour, in the parliamentary caucus, not to challenge again and again. I myself would have been in favour of a strategy of challenge every week and lose every week until finally you win. But the war of attrition was never started. And I'm afraid we've gone down to a terrible defeat.
How much of Labour's loss, though, was about Brexit? Boris Johnson was very clear that a vote for the Conservatives meant a vote for getting Britain out of the EU by the 31st of January. Was there an issue about the confusion around Labour's policy?
Well, I think there's no doubt that there was confusion about Labour. There was clarity about the message from the Conservatives, get Brexit done. They were not able to be wrestled onto the more difficult ground for them, which is you don't get Brexit done by leaving. You simply start Brexit by leaving the European Union, because then you have to negotiate a trade deal with the European Union, our biggest single partner. Then you have to start negotiating trade deals with external partners. And so I think there's a problem which was never brought up in the campaigning about the position of the Conservatives. The Labour Party did have one of the most incoherent positions on Brexit. They said they would renegotiate a deal, then they'd hold a referendum, but they weren't sure whether they'd be for or against the deal that they'd just renegotiated. There's no chance of standing in the middle of the road on a big issue like Remain versus Leave. And I think also, finally, Labour had a very, very you know about small target manifestos. This is probably the biggest target manifesto on planetary size. You could see it from the moon. The manifesto had so many commitments, and Labour were totally unclear what they were for. What was the single simple change they'd make in most people's lives? They made a different announcement every day, mainly with lots of money behind it, lots of borrowing or lots of tax increases to pay for it. And in the end, the message the public got was, "You'll definitely spend loads of money." And the British public are not unlike the Australian public. They are not for a return to high tax, high spend governments. And so I think everything came back to the leader in the end. Everything came back to either his coherence or incoherence, his position, his far leftness, all of these things crystallised in a stunning rejection for Labour.
Let's talk about who might be the leader going into the future for Labour. We've got a minute and a half to go. But in terms of the potential successors, I think there's quite a large group, six women included. How likely is it that it will be a female leader?
I think the mood in the party is it should be a woman. It's time for a woman. And there's no doubt that one of the things about the current Labour Party, parliamentary party, is there's a large number of very talented women. You could put together a very strong shadow cabinet made up only of women cabinet ministers. I think we need a break with the past, so we shouldn't have somebody who's been associated with the current mess, the Corbyn shadow cabinet. So that would rule out, say, a Rebecca Long-Bailey, who's favoured by John McDonnell, the shadow chancellor, and favoured by Jeremy himself. And I think it would rule out Emily Thornberry, who I think recently visited Australia, who's our shadow foreign secretary, because she's been too tied in with that. I think a voice needs to come from the outside, and the one that I think has got the most resonance at the moment is Jess Phillips, who's an MP from Birmingham. She's not been in the shadow cabinet. People when she speaks her mind, she's very witty, she's quite kind of down to earth, quite salty at times of what she says. I'd love to see her facing up to Boris Johnson in the House of Commons, because I think he can bluster his way out of most things, but he will not be able to outwit a woman who is quick-witted and very funny, and be very funny at his expense. And I think being from the West Midlands, from Birmingham, she would be a sign that Labour knows it's got to win back the seats they've lost to the Tories. The other messages would be sent by choosing a more metropolitan person, be saying, look, we've got our heartland, now is London, we're going to have a London MP, we'll become a London party, we'll be obsessed with the European Union. There are many mistakes we can make. There's a very narrow pathway to credible political competition at the next election.
John McTernan, thank you for your time today.
No, thank you.
John McTernan was a political advisor to former Labour Prime Minister Tony Blair and also a former media advisor to Julia Gillard.